Chapter 18, Natureville. They traded the truth of God for a lie and worshipped and served the creation rather than the Creator. When they had walked for more than an hour, Stephen noticed the scenery changing. There were more trees and the hills were greener than any area they had passed before. When they crossed a bridge over a rushing stream, Thomas spoke up. "I am so excited to see Natureville. When Andrew was describing it, it made me think of a forest outside of the city of Mammon that we used to go to when we were younger. Mammon was such an unpleasant place that David and I would look for any opportunity to escape. On the weekends, we would take a small tent and our backpacks and spend a few nights and days in the woods. It was the only time we had any peace. It was quiet and beautiful, just like Andrew said about Natureville. That stream we just passed reminded me of the little creek we would camp by and get our water from." "I was thinking the same thing when Andrew was talking," said David, smiling. "I can't wait to see Natureville myself. Those camping trips are the only pleasant memories I have of our childhood. Everything else about growing up in Mammon was miserable." "The landscape is getting more beautiful as we walk," Mr. Rich acknowledged. "Look over there," he said, pointing to a waterfall he spied in the distance. The group stopped to gaze at the waterfall and take in the beauty of the greenery that was now beginning to envelop the road. Taking a deep breath, Rob said, "It seems like the air is so clean here that you can even breathe more deeply." "I know what you mean," said Mary. "If fresh air was a fragrance, I think this would be it." "That is exactly how I felt when I first came to Natureville," said a friendly voice. The seekers turned to find a middle-aged man with a congenial face and a mop of curly gray hair walking toward them. The man, dressed in camouflage pants and a matching jacket, came up and shook hands all around, introducing himself as Mr. Woods. "So, you're from Natureville?" Stephen asked him. "Not originally. I was born in the City of Ambition, but I never felt like I fit in there. About 30 years ago, a buddy of mine and I came to Natureville on our spring break from college just to go camping. I loved it so much that I never left. And like your friend here said, I felt like I could breathe deeply for the first time in my life." As the group resumed walking down the road, Mr. Woods asked them, "So what brings all of you to Natureville? Vacation?" "Ah, no, just passing through," answered Stephen. "But we want to stop for lunch. Do you know a place you could recommend?" "Of course, I'm heading into town now to get some supplies, and I can show you a great little cafe." "Do you live around here?" David asked him. "Yes, just back off the road there in the forest." "Must be peaceful living in the woods like that," David said wistfully. "Yes, it is. That is what drew me here in the first place, the beauty and the peace." It wasn't long before they saw a wooden archway over the road. It was constructed out of thick logs with figures of animals deeply etched into the wood. There were a multitude of antlers decorating the archway, giving it a unique appearance. It was rustic looking but beautiful. A sign hanging from the center of the arch confirmed the group had reached the city limits of Natureville. "Welcome to Natureville," the sign read, followed by a cryptic statement that sounded like it was taken from some piece of ancient literature. "I love not man the less, but nature more." "Just like Andrew said," Mr. Rich commented. "What do you mean?" asked Rob. "I'm referring to that motto on the sign about loving nature more than people." "Oh, yes," Mr. Woods interjected. "It's true. Many of the folks who live here could do without people altogether. But not everyone who lives here is antisocial," he said with a smile. "May I ask you something, Mr. Woods?" inquired Jody. "Certainly," Mr. Woods replied. "If the people here love animals so much, then why would they shoot deer to get all those antlers for the entryway to the city?" Mr. Woods threw back his head and let out a hearty laugh. Jody frowned. "No one killed any deer," Mr. Woods reassured her. "Deer shed their antlers once a year, and you can collect them easily in the forest. That is not to say we don't have hunters here in Natureville, but those antlers were acquired without bloodshed." Oh, that's good. I thought those poor animals gave up their lives to decorate the archway, Jody grinned. I love animals, but we never saw many living in Sportstown. Well, if you are willing to stay for a few days, I could give you a tour, and you would have the chance to see the beauty of Natureville, including the animals, Mr. Woods offered. He stopped and pointed to some hills visible to the east. There are miles of hiking trails through that forest over there, which would give you the chance to see a beautiful waterfall and stream and even enjoy some great fishing. That sounds awesome, Thomas said. I would love that, added David. We really need to keep moving after lunch, Stephen interrupted, hoping to temper their enthusiasm. The Natureville Cafe is just ahead, said Mr. Woods. It's my favorite place in town. I'm sure you'll enjoy the food. Would you join us for lunch? Thomas asked. I would love to hear more about Natureville. Sure, if you don't mind the company. Mr. Woods walked into the cafe with the group. It was a small but charming place, with a wide plank wooden floor that squeaked as they stepped into the restaurant. Freshly cut wildflowers in tiny vases graced a few small round tables. Brightly colored curtains swayed in the breeze from the open windows. Mr. Woods waved to the proprietor and sat down with Thomas and David at one of the tables. The others filed into the narrow room and filled the two remaining tables. There were no menus and just one daily special offered at the lunch hour. They ordered 11 lunch specials with iced tea. Nothing seemed to move quickly in Natureville. During their long wait for the food to be prepared, Stephen and Timothy sat quietly at a table with Rob and Jody. Stephen's eyes were fixed on Thomas and David and the animated conversation they were carrying on with Mr. Woods. Timothy elbowed Stephen in the ribs. Worried? Timothy asked. Concern, Stephen replied. It just feels like deja vu. I don't want a repeat of what happened in Success City. Rob and Jody glanced at each other and then Stephen. We understand, Rob said. When the food was finally served, no one said much as they ate. Not that they could be heard, anyway. The atmosphere of the small dining room was dominated by the lively descriptions of life in Natureville that Mr. Woods was providing to David and Thomas. As they were finishing their lunch, Mr. Woods stood up and addressed the whole group. I wanted to offer a suggestion and an invitation. I know that you are traveling on toward the City of Grace, but it is getting later in the day and the sun is already fading. I'm concerned that you won't be able to reach a city where you can find overnight accommodations before dark. You still have quite a way to go before you are beyond the limits of Natureville, and walking at night here is not wise. That is when many animals are active and hunting for prey. I have a bunkhouse on my property where guests stay who come for hiking tours. I have plenty of room for all of you. You are welcome to stay, and if you're up for it, I could take you tomorrow to see that area I was telling you about where there is a waterfall and also some great stream fishing. Stephen glanced out the window. The sun was getting lower in the sky. He felt so frustrated that it had taken so long to be served lunch that they were now in this predicament. What do you think? Timothy asked Stephen. He is probably right about not trying to leave at this hour, and besides, we both could really use the rest. Neither of us slept much when we were in Ambition. It makes sense to me, said Mr. Rich from the next table, and I wouldn't mind a day off for fishing. I haven't done that in years. I would love to see that waterfall, said Jody. Stephen looked around the room, and the entire group seemed eager to accept Mr. Woods' invitation. Okay, sure. Thanks for the invite, Stephen said to Mr. Woods. Thomas and David were beaming and shook hands with Mr. Woods, thanking him for the invitation. The group walked back to the main road, retracing the steps that had brought them into Natureville. They crossed under the archway that had welcomed them. In a few minutes, Mr. Woods directed them to a side road they had not even noticed when they passed it earlier in the day. As they walked through the thickly wooded area, the scent of the pine trees was invigorating. Stephen wondered if he had ever smelled anything so clean and refreshing. The further they walked, the more he felt his body relaxing and the tenseness in his neck and jaw dissipating. He realized he was breathing more deeply too, just like Mr. Woods had said about himself when he first visited Natureville. A short distance later, they came to a clearing where a picture-perfect log cabin sat nestled among towering trees. The bunkhouse is just behind our house. It has two big rooms with four sets of bunk beds in each. The girls can have one side and you boys can take the other. But before I take you back there, let me introduce you to Mrs. Woods. She loves visitors, so she'll be glad to meet you all, he said with a smile. The group waited while Mr. Woods stepped into the cabin to call his wife. A few minutes later, a plump woman with a friendly face and sparkling eyes emerged from the house with Mr. Woods. She was wearing an apron over a long dress and her hands were covered with flour. "Forgive my appearance. Today's my baking day and I was just making some bread," Mrs. Woods said, smiling while trying to dust off her hands. "We are so happy to have guests. You are all most welcome." After greeting Mrs. Woods, the group marched to the bunkhouse, which was only a short distance to the rear of the house. They passed a fire circle with benches set up around a central fire pit. "That looks like a fun place to hang out in the evening," Thomas commented as they walked by. Mr. Woods answered, "Yes, it is. If you like, we can build a fire after dinner and sit together and enjoy the stars. They should be quite brilliant tonight, since the sky has been so clear. And perhaps you won't mind telling Mrs. Woods and I about your journey and where you've all come from." Mr. Woods unlocked the front door of the bunkhouse with a large iron skeleton key, and the group entered a spacious sitting room. Just like the main house, the bunkhouse was constructed of logs. The room had a tall open-beam ceiling and a beautiful stone fireplace. Overstuffed leather furniture faced the fireplace, giving a cozy and relaxed feel to the room. A hallway led to two large rooms full of bunk beds. Each room had a spacious bathroom. At the end of the hallway was a large linen closet where Mr. Woods said they would find sheets and blankets needed for their beds. "Relax and get a little rest. Dinner is at 7 p.m. With a wave, Mr. Woods was out the door. A few hours later, a knock on the bunkhouse door awakened Stephen. He had dozed off on the sofa in front of the fireplace. "Dinner will be ready in 10 minutes, Mr. Wood called out as he poked his head through the door. Stephen sat up and mumbled a sleepy-sounding acknowledgement. Most of the group had chosen to take naps, so Stephen got up and knocked on both bedroom doors to awaken anyone still asleep. "Dinner time," he called out. When Mr. Woods opened his front door to welcome the group for the evening meal, Stephen was amazed at the spaciousness of the log home. Like the bunkhouse, it had a high, open-beam ceiling, but the huge stone fireplace in the sitting room dwarfed the one in the bunkhouse. The dining room held a massive table that could seat 16 people. It was obvious they were used to entertaining large groups. The smell of freshly baked bread wafted through the house. Other delicious aromas were emanating from the kitchen. Mary walked to the kitchen and asked Mrs. Woods if she could help. "Yes, thank you," Mrs. Woods said. "Will you take these trays out to the table?" Mary happily obliged and walked into the dining room with two simple wooden trays stacked high with freshly baked bread rolls. "Those look delicious," said Ray, "and they smell delicious too," his brother Ben added. Mrs. Woods had been ladling stew into large bowls, and Mr. Woods and Mary delivered them to the table. Rob and Jody jumped up and went to the kitchen to help. Before long, everyone had settled into a place at the table with a steaming bowl of stew accompanied by fresh bread and butter. The dinner conversation was lively as the hosts asked their names and the cities from which they had come. As Stephen explained what had driven him to leave the city of respectability, both Mr. and Mrs. Woods listened intently. When the others added their portion of the story, describing their dreams and their determination to meet the king, Stephen noticed Mr. Woods had stopped eating altogether and appeared captivated. But when Mr. Rich told his story, Mr. Woods dropped his spoon and just stared with mouth agape. "Are you saying that you left everything in wealth and luxury to seek another kingdom?" Mr. Woods asked Mr. Rich in astonishment. "Yes, and it has been an amazing journey. But the next portion should be the best of all," Mr. Rich concluded. Mr. Woods exhaled deeply before he began speaking. "When I was growing up in Success City, I always felt like there had to be more to life than what I could see there. My father was constantly striving for higher positions and told me I needed to do the same. I obeyed him and went to college, to prepare myself to compete in that crazy world. But when my college roommate and I came here to Natureville on spring break and I saw the beauty of this place and experienced the quiet, I never wanted to go back. And it has been 1,000 times better living here than in the city of ambition. But listening to all of you talk about the kingdom of I am makes me want to join you on your journey. Mrs. Woods turned to her husband with a look of surprise on her face. What are you saying? We have a good life here, Mrs. Woods exclaimed. Yes, yes, of course we do, Mr. Woods responded, patting her hand. Why don't we go outside and light a campfire and continue our discussion, he said to the group. Mrs. Woods stood up and began clearing the table. Everyone followed suit, carrying their dishes to the sink. Mr. Woods led the way out the kitchen's back door to the fire circle. He struck a match and lit a pile of kindling, which had been arranged beneath some larger pieces of wood. It wasn't long before flames started leaping and the crackling of the burning wood signaled the start of a roaring fire. Thomas stared at the night sky as a multitude of stars twinkled above them. Look at that sky, he said to his brother as they walked to the fire circle. It is so beautiful and so peaceful. I would love to live here, he said quietly. Yeah, me too, said David. Stephen elbowed Timothy when he overheard Thomas and David. As the flickering firelight illuminated their faces, he desperately hoped the brothers would not stay behind when the group left Natureville. While the rest of the group gathered around the fire, Mr. Woods asked more questions about his guests' experiences. He was especially interested in their dreams and their stories about Andrew the Encourager. When they told him about their visit to the City of Seekers, he seemed enthralled. Am I to understand that anyone who wants to find the king and his kingdom must first go to the City of Seekers? Mr. Woods asked, just as his wife joined them at the campfire. Yes, Stephen said, that is one thing Andrew the Encourager repeated to all of us at different times. Why are you asking that? Mrs. Wood asked her husband. You're not thinking of going there, are you? Sitting in the semi-darkness and unable to read her face, Stephen couldn't tell if she was annoyed or worried. Well, Mr. Woods replied slowly, we have both wondered over the years if there was more to life than what we know. And to be honest, hearing about their journey has reawakened that question in my mind. As it did for me, said Mr. Rich, I would encourage you both to seriously consider it. It is a journey worth taking. No one spoke for a long time. The sound of the crackling fire and the dancing of the flames seemed to mesmerize everyone. May I interest all of you in a hike up Green Mountain to see the waterfall tomorrow? And then some stream fishing? You are all welcome to stay one more night with us before you continue on your journey, Mr. Woods offered. Just as Stephen was about to decline the offer, Thomas and David both said, that sounds great. Rob added, that does sound really tempting. I love fishing. We have never even seen a waterfall up close or gone fishing, Ben said. We would love it. I am quite sure we could all use the R&R, Mr. Rich interjected. Realizing he was outnumbered, Stephen looked at Timothy, who shrugged his shoulders. We aren't on a deadline, Timothy acknowledged, and Andrew did say it was okay for us to enjoy Natureville. Wonderful, Mr. Woods said with enthusiasm. We can get started after breakfast. Stephen didn't have the energy to argue. He really was tired. Maybe it's all for the best, he thought. The group expressed their thanks for the wonderful dinner and headed to the bunkhouse for the night. An early morning knock on the bunkhouse door and Mr. Woods' cheery, "Good morning, breakfast is ready," roused Stephen from a deep sleep. He had been in the middle of a vivid dream. He dreamt that Mr. Reputable had gone to see his father to tell him that Stephen had turned down the offer to join his business. Chloe was crying and so was his mother. It was nightmarish and he tried to shake it off as he climbed down from the top bunk, but he couldn't stop wondering if the dream was true. He felt a knot developing in the pit of his stomach. As they walked from the bunkhouse to the Woods' home, Timothy kept glancing over at Stephen. What's wrong? Timothy asked him. You look like someone died. Just a bad dream, Stephen muttered. Mrs. Woods had prepared a delightful feast of scrambled eggs, thickly sliced smoked bacon, and homemade biscuits with honey butter. A welcome pot of coffee helped wake up the sleepy group. Everyone smiled and chatted as they passed the food around the table. everyone except Stephen, who remained uncharacteristically silent and scarcely ate anything on his plate. After they finished breakfast, Mr. Woods encouraged them to fetch knapsacks to carry the lunches Mrs. Woods had already prepared for them. He also instructed them to fill their water bottles, and then they would be ready to begin their outing to Green Mountain. As the group began hiking, Mr. Woods pointed out various plants, flowers, and trees. He could name each of them and explained which were edible and which were poisonous. He identified many different birds that they saw along the way. He also described the animals that lived in the forest. "Are there any dangerous animals in the area where we are going?" Mary asked. "You don't need to worry about that. There are some potentially dangerous animals in Natureville, but most stay away from the hiking trails because of the number of people that frequent them." "What do you mean by potentially dangerous animals?" Ray asked. "I mean that there is a potential for danger if you encounter them, but we should not encounter any on this outing," Mr. Woods said. "Which animals are you talking about?" Jody asked him. "Mountain lions and bears, to be specific," Mr. Woods replied. Suddenly, the rattling sound in the bushes just ahead made the group come to a nervous halt. A graceful doe followed by twin fawns came bounding across the trail and quickly disappeared into the woods on the other side. "Oh, they were so beautiful," Jody said. "I just wish they hadn't disappeared so quickly. We scarcely got a glimpse of them," Ray said. "There will be plenty more to see," their guide assured them. "These woods are full of them." The trail was getting steeper as they began to climb the lower slope of Green Mountain. Before long, they came to a small stream, which they crossed by stepping from one stone to another. "The waterfall we are headed to feeds this stream as well as a few others," Mr. Woods commented. After another full hour of climbing, Mr. Woods stopped. "Can you hear the water?" Everyone strained to listen, and Ben and Ray both let out a simultaneous, "Yes!" "That is the waterfall," Mr. Woods said with a big grin. "Not too much farther." 20 minutes later, they reached the breathtaking sight they had been aiming for, the Green Mountain Waterfall. It fell from a height of nearly 100 feet and splashed off the rocks below into a stream that flowed over a rocky riverbed. The sight and sound of it was exhilarating. The group stood still, feeling the cool spray of the water on their faces. They gazed in admiration at its unrivaled beauty without saying a word. "There is a great spot for our picnic just over there," Mr. Woods said, breaking the reverie. He pointed to a huge flat rock along the stream that resembled a long table. As the group unpacked the knapsacks and passed out the lunches on the makeshift stone table, Ben stood at the edge of the stream. He seemed awestruck, watching the water as it tumbled down from the rocky heights. He turned to the group and said, "I have never seen anything so beautiful in my entire life. In the city of trepidation, we rarely ventured outside because we were so afraid of the demon of fear roaming the streets. Our lives were so confined and gloomy and hopeless. But seeing this waterfall, it's like the complete opposite of everything we grew up with. I could just stay here forever." "I know how you feel," said Thomas. "The city of Mammon was like that for us, too, and this place feels so peaceful and free." The delicious lunch Mrs. Woods had prepared was devoured by the group, hungry after hours of hiking. Mr. Woods, who had carried 3 fishing rods with him, along with some bait and tackle in his backpack, asked, "Who is up for some fishing?" Ben, Rob, and Mr. Rich were the first ones to give it a try. Mr. Woods walked with them away from the waterfall to a quieter spot upstream. Just where this stream took a bend, they found a shaded fishing hole created by a fallen log and a large boulder. It looked promising. Timothy and Stephen had walked with them and sat down on a large nearby rock, watching as they fished. "You haven't said much all day. Still thinking about your dream?" Timothy asked quietly. "Yeah, couldn't get it out of my head," Stephen answered. "Do you want to share? Sometimes it helps." Stephen sighed. "Okay, it was about my dad." "Your dad?" "Yeah, my dad. In the dream, Mr. Reputable had gone to tell him that I refused his offer of business partnership, and he was so angry. and my mom was crying and Chloe was crying. It was a mess. I wish I could just push it out of my mind, but Stephen shook his head in frustration. But you can't. Do you know why you can't? Timothy asked gently. Probably because I think it's true, and my parents are probably upset with me right now. I know I shouldn't let it bother me. I know I did the right thing, but it is really bothering me. I just got a fish, Ben cried as he struggled with his pole, which was bouncing up and down as the fish tried desperately to get away. Mr. Woods instructed him to reel the fish in slowly but steadily without jerking the rod. In a few moments, Ben was displaying his catch for all to see, a beautiful, glistening rainbow trout. Moments later, both Mr. Rich and Rob had bites on their lines and soon found themselves reeling in similarly sized trout. Ray, Thomas, and David ran over to see what the fishermen had hauled in, while Mr. Woods helped put their prized catches on a stringer. I want to give fishing a try, Ray said. Ben handed his brother the fishing pole and said, you're going to love this. While Ben walked over to get some bait for Ray, David and Thomas took over the poles Rob and Mr. Rich had been using. Stephen and Timothy sat quietly watching the excitement of the fishermen. Finally, Stephen said, I've been trying to figure out why I feel sick in the pit of my stomach every time I think about my parents being disappointed with me over my refusal to go into business. It seems so juvenile for me to worry about that. Any revelations? Timothy asked him. Well, maybe. I had an older brother named Martin, Stephen began, who died when he was 20 years old. I was only 10 at the time. My parents had fixed all their hopes on him, and when he died, they were devastated. Martin was everything they wanted in a son. Smart, hardworking, ambitious, and very respectable in the eyes of the community. I was constantly compared to him, and of course, I never measured up. They always seemed so disappointed with me because I didn't have Martin's hard-driving personality. That is why it wasn't too difficult for me to leave my home to start on this journey. I felt like I could never please my parents no matter what I did. So when we were having dinner with Mr. Reputable in the City of Ambition, and he started saying all that stuff about my father being proud of me and how the city fathers and respectability have been planning to groom me for leadership in the city, something happened inside of me. It was the first time I had a flicker of a hope that maybe I could make my father proud of me. Then, when Mr. Reputable made that incredible offer to work with them and become a partner in his business, I saw the way it could happen. That is why the temptation to abandon our journey was so intense for me. It wasn't about Chloe. It was really about my dad. Timothy looked at Stephen with piercing eyes. Wow, that is some profound insight. So now that you understand why the temptation to stay in Ambition was so strong, and why the dream you had last night bothered you so much, what are you going to do with it? I realize that it comes down to this one basic issue. Do I want to please the king or my family? And I just need to decide once and for all and stick with it. Have you decided? Timothy asked. Yes, I want to please the king, and I want to continue our journey to the City of Grace. I just need some help fighting off these thoughts about my parents. Can I make a suggestion? Of course, please do. That dream you had the night we spent in the City of Ambition, do you remember the details? Yes, quite vividly, Stephen answered. Okay, repeat it to me, Timothy instructed. I saw the king on his throne, and he said, Stephen, there is nothing in the kingdom of I that will satisfy your heart, but great joy awaits you in the City of Grace. I am waiting for you. Then I woke up. If you will repeat those words the king spoke to you every time those thoughts about your parents' disappointment in you comes to mind, I believe it will drive away those thoughts and calm your heart too. How did you get so wise? Stephen asked with a wry smile. Truthfully, I started using that trick myself as we have been traveling. When things got a little difficult, I called to mind something I read in the King's book and repeated it to myself over and over. It always calmed me and helped me think clearly. That is why I am sure if you will repeat the King's words to yourself, it'll help you. That is a great suggestion, and I believe you are right. Even just repeating his words this one time has made me feel more peaceful. Thank you. Look, look, someone was calling out. When Stephen and Timothy looked in the direction of the voice, they saw an awe-inspiring sight. A herd of deer, 4 does, 3 fawns, and a buck with a huge rack of antlers were standing at the edge of the stream. Drinking from the cool waters, they seemed serene and majestic at the same time. And after satisfying their thirst, the deer wandered slowly back into the forest from which they had emerged. "That was so cool," Ray said. "That was worth the entire hike up here," said Jody. "They were so beautiful." "Did you see the rack on that buck? It was huge," said Thomas. "I know, it was impressive," answered David. Mr. Woods called out, "Everyone, can you gather over here?" The group wandered back to the stone table, and Mr. Woods said, "I wanted to show you one more spot if you are up for a little more hiking. It is a place where you can have a great view of the entire valley below." "Sure," Thomas said. "It's okay with me," Rob chimed in. Mr. Woods looked around at the affirmative nods and said, "Okay, great. It will take us about 30 minutes to get up to the place I have in mind. I think you'll find it interesting because it reveals something about the people who live in Natureville." "How so?" Mr. Rich asked as the group began hiking. "They call it their high place, where they worship the things they worship," Mr. Woods said cryptically. "You'll see what I mean when we get up there." After a half an hour of climbing what seemed to be nothing more than a goat trail, the group finally crested the hillside and found themselves on a plateau-like ridge that was filled with stone altars of all sizes. "What is this place?" Mary asked as she looked around. "Look at this inscription," Ray called out, kneeling by a small stone altar. "It says, dedicated to the squirrel god." "That is ridiculous," he said, snickering. "And this one says, to the deer gods," read Jody. "I like deer, but you won't find me worshiping them," she said with a laugh. Mr. Rich, Stephen, and Timothy walked over to examine the largest and most elaborate of the altars. It was perched at the edge of the plateau overlooking the valley. "Come and see this one," Mr. Rich encouraged, waving to the others to gather around. Made of highly polished granite, the altar was large and had a headstone which was intricately engraved with a picture of a lion. Mr. Rich read the inscription aloud. "Dedicated to the lion god, king of all." "That is just weird," Ray said. "I don't think it's any stranger than worship of sports idols in sports town or the idol of intellect in academia. I think people just worship what they love," commented Rob. "That is very true. And I didn't realize the fullness of that truth until you, all of you, came here to Natureville," Mr. Woods said. "What do you mean?" asked Stephen. "Do you mind if we sit down and rest for a short while?" Mr. Woods asked. "I want to share something with all of you." He pointed to some stone benches and asked, "Is that all right?" Stephen nodded, and the group sat down and waited to hear what was on Mr. Woods's mind. "Last night, when all of you were sharing where you came from and why you undertook this journey of yours, I was honestly flabbergasted. I hadn't thought much about the meaning or purpose of life in the last 30 years since I've been living here in Natureville. I have just appreciated the beauty of this place, and I thought that was all that was important in life, to find a comfortable spot for myself and live out my days enjoying it. And then you guys showed up. Listening to you brought up those old wonderings I had years ago about whether there was more to life than what I knew. When I heard your dreams about the king calling you to find his kingdom, I was provoked to jealousy. I sat there thinking, if this is true, I want to have a dream where I know the king is calling me. And then, when I went to sleep last night, it happened," Mr. Woods blurted out. The whole group was hanging on his every word, and Timothy asked, "What happened?" "I had a dream about the king." "Please tell us about it," Stephen encouraged. Mr. Woods exhaled and began his story. "In the dream, I was walking in the forest alone. Suddenly, I heard this powerful voice behind me, and I turned around. There was this glowing figure of a man in a long white robe with a crown on his head. He said, 'Tom, why do you worship the creation instead of the creator?' He called me Tom, which is the name my parents called me when I was a child. But no one, not even my wife, calls me Tom. But when he said it, my heart felt so warmed. I asked, 'Who are you?' And he replied, 'I am the king and the creator of the whole world. You are living in a false kingdom, and you need to find my kingdom, the kingdom of I Am. Go to the city of seekers, and you will be told what to do.' And then I woke up." The small group burst into spontaneous applause and cheers. "That is wonderful," Stephen said. "Congratulations," Mr. Rich said with a smile. "The king is calling you too." "What are you going to do?" asked Timothy. "What do you think Mrs. Woods will say to all of this, or have you already told her?" "I have not," Mr. Woods said glumly. "I am concerned about what she will say. I was hoping she'd have a dream too, so we could go together. But what if she doesn't?" His voice trailed off. "If she doesn't, you still have to decide for yourself if you will answer the king's call," said Stephen. "We all had to decide for ourselves, even if no one came with us." After a few moments of silence, Mr. Woods stood to his feet and, without a trace of his usual cheeriness, said, "It's getting late. We should go." The group walked quietly, with little conversation exchanged for the next several hours. They fully understood the decision, which weighed heavily upon Mr. Woods. Finally, they entered the clearing where the cozy log home came into view. "I'll knock on your door when dinner is ready," Mr. Woods said quietly as he walked up the steps of his front porch. Stephen and Timothy nodded and waved as they headed toward the bunkhouse. Later that evening, while the guests devoured slices of homemade apple pie, Mrs. Woods addressed them. "I have something to say to all of you," she said. The table became quiet, and all eyes were on their hostess. "Your visit has been very illuminating for us," she said, as if searching for the right descriptor. "I think it's fair to say that we have never had any guests quite like you, nor have we ever had the type of dinner conversation we have shared with you." I am not sure where she's going with this, Stephen thought to himself. "If I am honest," Mrs. Woods continued, "your discussion about a king and another kingdom besides the kingdom of I really bothered me. But at the same time, it reminded me of discussions that Mr. Woods and I had when we were young. We wondered if there was more to life than that which the kingdom of I had to offer. But as the years passed and we got more and more comfortable in our lives, those thoughts disappeared. We were self-satisfied and had everything we thought we wanted. But your visit, your stories, threw a wrench in all of that. And you, Mr. Rich, your story bothered me most of all." Her face was flushed with emotion as she spoke. Stephen glanced at Mr. Rich, whose face bore a puzzled expression as he listened. When these young people babbled on about dreams and visions and leaving their families to chase some mythical kingdom, I chalked it up to youthful idealism. We had been like that when we were young. But when Mr. Rich, a man our age, talked about leaving wealth and luxury to seek out the same king, I had to pay attention. And I could tell my husband was captivated by his story while he was speaking. Mr. Woods smiled wanly at his wife. She smiled back before continuing. "I know that you're leaving tomorrow, but I just wanted you to know that I'm glad you came here. You have stirred up something in both of us," she said as she nodded toward her husband, "and we won't rest until we figure this out. So thank you for challenging our complacency by sharing your adventure with us."